Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to today's webinar, Putting Children First, Changing How We Communicate with Parents to Improve Children's Outcomes. My name's Adam Dean. I'm a Senior Research Officer here at the Australian Institute of Family Studies. I'd like to start by acknowledging the traditional custodians of the lands on which we are meeting in Melbourne. The traditional custodians are the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nations. I pay my respects to their elders, past and present, and to the elders from other communities who may be participating today. Today's webinar will discuss new research on ways to communicate with parents to improve children's development and well-being. Very pleased to have two excellent presenters today who will be sharing their insights and experience on this topic. Derek McCormack is a principal specialist at the Parenting Research Centre, focusing on knowledge translation. In his role, Derek oversees a number of programs and projects, with his core activities including consultation, strategy development, planning, and in many cases, managing the development of evidence-informed resources for a range of stakeholders and clients. Derek's passion is the translation of research and best practice into the day-to-day practices of parents and those who support them. We also have Leslie Taylor joining us today. Leslie is the National Manager Prevention Strategies and Northern Territory Manager at NAPCAN. In this role, Leslie lives and breathes child abuse prevention. Leslie's work focuses on the need to support families, invest in connected child-safe communities, and embrace a culture of compassion and shared responsibility for the well-being of children. Leslie actively advocates for this approach to achieve better outcomes for individuals, families, communities, and government budgets. Just a bit of housekeeping. We encourage you to send your questions through during the webinar for Derek and Leslie to answer during our Q&A session at the end of today's presentation. Those we can't get to will be answered in the forum on our website. Please let us know if you don't want your question published in the online forum on the website following the presentation. As always, our webinars are recorded. We're unable to make the slides available to download today, our apologies, but these will be available along with a recording of the webinar, audio transcript, and slide outline on our website in the next week or so. Thank you everyone for joining us today. I will now hand over to Derek and Leslie. Please make them feel very welcome.
Hello, good afternoon, good morning for those in the western part of our country. My name is Derek McCormack. I'm here in the same room with Leslie Taylor. We're delighted to have everybody join us. Today's webinar will be handled as a sort of conversation between us and you as the participants, and also between us two people. The kind of feel that we're going for in this presentation is one of reflection. We're going to essentially tell a story about some research that's being already put into use through Parenting Research Centre and NAPCAN. And we're going to talk about where that research came from. And we're also going to talk about what it might mean to those who are wanting to put that research into practice. To begin with, I'd just like to acknowledge that where we are in this room, we're presenting our webinar on the lands of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nations. And we'd like to pay our respects to their elders past, present, and emerging. We'd like to acknowledge any of you today joining us who are of Indigenous descent. I'd also like to acknowledge the partners that helped us get here to this stage of our work. You can see at Parenting Research Centre, we've worked very closely with the Frameworks Institute, but also with the support of Victorian Government, Victoria Education and Training, the Australian Government, Social Services, New South Wales Government, and Benevolent Society. All these partners helped fund the research I'm about to describe. As I describe it, Leslie will be talking with me about her perspectives on what it has to tell us. And as we get towards the end of the presentation, we'll talk about where we are right now and just recent developments in putting this work into practice. Okay, so the story behind this work is the story of framing. A couple of years back, with the help of those partners, Parenting Research Centre embarked on a new piece of research which takes a quite robust and detailed approach to a question. And the question is around how you might frame or reframe parenting. But why think about framing? What is framing? And how can we reframe parenting? That's where we began. First of all, let's back up and talk about what we mean. What is framing? And why would you think about doing it on any particular concept? The concept that we were looking at was parenting, but framing work has been done on a range of concepts, including child development, some work in the US and here in Australia. Mental health as a concept is being framed and reframed through research right now. And a range of other topics have been put through this process. So why think about framing? Essentially, as a first point to make, you think about framing because you want to sustain a social change. Perhaps you want to change a conversation. You want to change some behavior that exists around that conversation. But if you want to do that, it goes beyond perhaps the traditional means of market research and just understanding what kinds of communication you might want to push out. It actually requires a focus on what it takes to have cultural change. And framing is one approach to tackling social and cultural change. So with that in mind, a quick example of what it can look like, how framing can make a difference. This comes from the literature, and what it illustrates, just to pause on this slide, is that you can have a particular initiative or idea framed in two different ways and have it received in two very different ways. So we have, for example, the framing message here on the top left: given the importance of free speech, would you favor allowing a hate group to hold a political rally? And then with a different frame: given the risk of violence, would you favor allowing a hate group to hold a political rally? So those two takes on a particular idea, you can see, led to very different receptions. A simple example of how you communicate something can mean the world.
Love and support, and just a natural human thing to have challenges throughout parenting. Before, when you asked me what factors impact might come about, may lead to challenges in parenting, and I completely did not think of this, but I completely agree that it's social situations, the emotional stress, all those factors are, I can tell, that would have an impact on parenting.
Good parent, giving them discipline. I think some people perhaps love their kids too much and don't see the negative sides of them or how they affect other people. I think it's something you can't learn. You either can do it or you can't. Government support, family support, family, friends, community support. And I think this whole thing has broken down in my generation, and we thought it was going to actually get better. So I think it all kind of mixes in together.
That video was reflecting on some interviews with people having first been asked about the topic of parenting generally and what supports it and what might influence it. And then in the after parts of those interviews, those same individuals were reacting to the same question, but having been exposed to a particular frame on parenting. But what are we really getting at here? Let's unpack a bit further what we're talking about when we're talking about framing. Look at this quote here from the Australian Public Service Commission. It basically backs up the argument for framing. So what we have here is a assumption or a recommendation. It's important to focus on framing and how you are framing your messages when you think you have a problem. That's a very good reason to get into the detail on framing a particular issue. So you have a problem you're trying to resolve. And with the research we conducted at Parenting Research Center and with the help of the Frameworks Institute, the problem or the issue we were wanting to focus on was parenting. How is it really understood as something we want to support for the good of children? And what framing teaches us and what this research methodology helps us with is the fact that you can push a message out thinking that it will be received in a particular way, but while you are saying A, it is possible and often, unfortunately, the case that the message is being received as B. What you're hearing back, having communicated, is not exactly what you thought you were communicating with your message.
I don't think there's such thing as a bad parent. I think we're all doing the best we can.
There's not a rule book, there's not like a textbook for it.
I don't think there's a obvious right or wrong way, do you know what I mean?
I think it's just basic, love your child, provide.
If you care about your family and your kids, just stick with what your gut instincts are, and that's good.
Any parent that just gives their kids lots of love and attention would be a good parent.
But it's cyclical, isn't it? So like if you were raised by shitty parents, then you're probably going to turn out to be a shitty parent.
So how do we reframe parenting? What we do in this research was we take an approach to the framing, which is to aim not to have everybody speak about parenting and supporting parenting in the same way, as illustrated here on the left, where there's various different directions of the conversation. We're not trying to have every arrow point in the same direction, but more like shifting the general conversation to go in the general same direction. So if you can imagine those arrows on the left as many different messages around the concept of parenting, and they're saying quite different things, this kind of research and what it offers us is some approaches and tools to have them aligned a little better based on some good data, aligned in terms of how those messages are framed, so they're heading in generally the same direction. This is the idea of shifting the conversation for social change. That's sort of the ambition behind the research. So how do we do it? How do we go about reframing it? First of all, and this is step one, and we'll have Leslie comment on this in just a moment, we carry out research, in this case, with more than 7,000 Australians, who then repeat on repeated engagement led to 15,000 responses in this work, where we're essentially exploring the concept of parenting with those involved in the research and unpacking what we're hearing through those many interactions with the participants. So the tip here, step one in reframing parenting, is to understand what you're up against. What is it that's in the minds and hearts of people when they're thinking and talking parenting? Essentially, mapping the terrain.
What comes to mind when you think about parenting?
Love, joy, caring.
Love and support.
Yikes.
It's a nightmare.
Disaster.
Parenting is very hard.
The responsibility of raising a kid.
Responsibility?
So it's a lot of responsibility.
What does it mean to be a good parent?
I don't think there's such thing as a bad parent. I think we're all doing the best we can.
I don't think there's a obvious right or wrong way.
Can we sort of say what's good and what's bad? Everyone has their own values, their own beliefs.
There's not a rule book, there's not like a textbook for it.
I think it's just basic. Love your child, provide.
If you care about your family and your kids, just stick with what your gut instincts are, and that's good.
Good parent, giving them discipline.
Discipline is one thing.
I think it's raising a child up with boundaries.
Just watching over them, making sure that everything is sweet.
Give your kids the tools to get through life.
Teaching them things they need to know for later in life.
What are the things that influence how somebody goes about parenting?
Part of it comes from their own parenting or lack thereof.
Probably the way they was brought up.
I'm guessing their own upbringing.
The way your parents were, you seem to follow suit.
Well, they're a good parent because they've actually made an effort to do it. If you've decided to take it on, you've got a responsibility to do it.
Parenting for each individual child is completely different.
It's the child's own brain cells and the way that they're wired.
I think one of the key trends right now is that we are going towards a US rock culture. So maybe that's the other contributing factor where the time away from child is being taken away.
We've got so many distractions with computers, etc., that we're not covering the fundamentals.
As someone growing up in the 21st century, I don't think there's as much face-to-face as there used to be.
Stress from, say, work or other external factors.
Maybe what they do for work, depending if they work like a lot of hours.
Are there things that could improve parenting in Australia, you think?
Wow.
Wait, let me think about it for a second.
I don't know.
I have no idea. I'm sure there are. I'm sure a lot of things have been done to try and already do that.
I think Australia is a great country. So I think we have those things in place already.
Look, there's so many services available out there.
You know, you can go to the system. They can help you, but you're better off going with friends and family.
Getting support from
friends.
Just need to talk to other people to get other ideas that might contribute or help to your child.
The best thing you could possibly have is a good example yourself.
I don't really know exactly what hasn't. I'm sure there's been plenty of things that have been done, but I can't really think of anything that they haven't already tried. And
I feel like there's not really a lot that you can do because it's all up to them.
No, because it's all on them. It's about how you've been raised and the responsibility and how you take that responsibility. And not everyone's up to it.
Okay. So looking at that video that we just saw there, it's quite a good illustration of the many arrows going in many directions. What we have in this sample, and this of course isn't representing all of the 7,000 plus interviews and interactions with the participants in the research, what we have is a sample of what is there when you go to map the terrain. A number of different perspectives on parenting, a number of different assumptions or ideas around what might support parenting. And this was where we really started to get into the detail of what is it that we're aiming to reframe. You saw it near the end of that video, people were pondering on what might be a good ways to support parenting and maybe help parents with that job. And it was a little difficult, a little harder question to answer. So with that kind of mapping going on, what helps through this methodology is to go through a process of capturing and essentially analyzing those various different perspectives and grouping them together. On the slide here, we see some examples of what we call cultural models. And the Framework Institute has helped us capture these, pull them out of the data and map them as models. I don't have enough time to go into great detail on these models that you're seeing on the screen, but just to briefly comment, what we can do is analyze material we see, conversations we have, messages that we are ourselves putting out, and check that are they aligning with one or more of these models when it comes to parenting. As a quick example, the individualism type models are parts of messages which tend to insist that parenting is around choice and decisions. It's down to the individual and about how that parenting goes. That's quite deterministic, if you like. And another area here on the screen, another area of cultural modeling around parenting is the area of collectivism, the importance of integration and being what surrounds us shapes us. There's a collective, very important collective part of how parenting works. It takes a village to raise a child. Again, wish we had more time to unpack these models, but just to say, as a first step, mapping the terrain and then getting these models kind of pulled out is a really interesting first step to reframing any issue, in this case, parenting. Now I get the chance to have a bit of a chat with Leslie. So Leslie, that's step one. That's the first advice, mapping the terrain. From your experience with NAPCAN and just your impressions of this work, what would you like to say?
Well, my background and experience has been in talking with parents in a variety of settings, a variety of places, and having conversations in the media around parenting. And what I know is that parenting is a highly emotive topic. It triggers a huge range of issues in us and a huge range of feelings in everyone, especially parents, mostly around guilt, I have to say. But we have to talk about it. We have to talk about parenting in order to be able to have conversations around children's safety and well-being. So I've been forced into the conversations around parenting, and I've seen how things have gone wrong when what I think I'm saying is so accurate and so non-judgmental, and yet the repercussions have been the opposite of what I intended. My child protection background has provided me with kind of like a default position about focusing on the child and not on the parent. So I learned very early on in my career is the best way to avoid getting seriously off track is to keep your focus completely and firmly on the child, on their well-being and their development, which is why this research made so much sense to me.
So what you reflected on there was the you say A and you might hear B, and when you're hearing back.
Often.
Okay. Let's keep talking, but first let's jump to the next tip. I know we have more to say about what you just segued there, so this works well. The next tip, or the next sort of recommendation out of the seven that we're going to talk about today is changing the big idea. So let's imagine on the concept in mind, in particular parenting this time, the work is done on mapping the terrain. You've got some models that you're able to check things against. What's at play here? What models are at play when talking with people about the issue? What our research and analysis did here after quite a robust and in-depth multi-stage analysis, what it did was offer us a very strong recommendation. I mean, a quite unusually strong recommendation for this type of research. Often it can be quite nuanced, but lucky us, we got a very bold and clear recommendation from this work. It said, aim to shift the conversation. So Leslie, exactly what you were talking from your gut and your experience was what we were being told. Shift the conversation from parenting, effective parenting, parenting support to a conversation, hopefully a national conversation, around child well-being, child development, children doing well. This is, and on the face of it, deceptively simple because it's a clear recommendation. But let's have a look at what was behind it. What you're seeing here on this next slide is a graphic which depicts the strength of that recommendation. Let's explain it. This graph is just one capture from the data where three groups of people involved in the research were asked to comment on two different frames. The first frame being effective parenting, depicted in orange, was provided to a group of people. And they were asked to then think about, would they support policy decisions, as you can see along the x-axis, would they support publicly funded childcare, would they support mandated family-friendly work policies, and so on. Would you support these things as a consumer, as a part of the society? Having received the message around the parenting program and that message being framed around effective parenting. The second frame offered was that child development frame. The same program was described to a different group of people, but it was instead leading with the child development frame. So they're getting a different message for the same initiative. Would they support policy support for that program? Would they support publicly funded parenting centers? That initiative, as described, but with a different frame, the one of child development. The third group is the control. So along this the zero line on the axis, that group received neither frame. So they just got the description of the work without the frames. So what you're getting here is quite a rarity, and that's why the recommendation was so strong. Likewise with this graph, it's just another piece of depiction of the same recommendation coming through. The child development frame was the orange, and that was universally positive in its reception, and the effective parenting was actually going below the line, the effective parenting being the black, going below the line, having the effect you didn't want to have. So the framing was starkly different in terms of people being motivated in their decisions or their support. Yeah, so if you look there, we can see your willingness to pay additional taxes, universally positive when it comes to the child development frame, and across the board, below the line when it comes to the effective parenting frame. So there's a kind of you might think a kind of an obvious aspect to this. Perhaps there are reasons in the models that we looked at earlier that yes, a parenting frame might be received more negatively than a child development frame. That might not surprise you that a child development frame is better received. People do gather well around the values of protecting children and child well-being. The good thing about this is we have data. The data is telling us, yes, your gut feelings are right. Do go with child-focused messages. Do go with a child development frame. So what does that mean? How do you go with it? How do you go and enact that kind of recommendation? Well, as a first step, you think about messaging, communication, what's going on in your strategic communications, and you seek to avoid certain kinds of frame, let's say things listed here on the left, and to advance other kinds of framing, for example, the things listed on the right here. These are examples of things that would be useful to take on, and we'll just pause for a moment so you can have a look at those. So the modelling piece and the recommendation around shifting the conversation leads to this kind of recommendation around what to avoid in advance. Reframing work often does this. It helps you just consider how it is your messages might fit into the left or the right part of this list. And again, it might seem to people working in our sector not too surprising, you know, that it's advised to not be too deterministic around parenting. It might be to some of us quite obvious that maybe it's less constructive to talk about bad parenting or good parenting instead of talking about child development. But again, this research has given us data that backs up that notion. Leslie, talk to me.
This is very interesting for me. So, in fact, just last week when Nat Kendrell Taylor, who heads up the Frameworks Institute, was travelling around Australia to present on this literature, a community centre in attendance realised that they had been spectacularly unsuccessful in attracting parents to their workshop named Parenting Skills. and simply could not attract anyone to the workshop. They reframed simply the name of their workshop to say, learn about what children need to thrive. And they now have a wait list. And it was that dramatic. Parents staying away. It looked like your chart. Parents staying away in droves to being unable to manage the demand to learn more about children's development, and yet the course content remained exactly the same.
I can reflect on a similar example just come to my head, and that is we at Parenting Research Centre, we do head a national initiative around peer support for parents. It's called My Time. And with that and promoting that to the public, we had a similar experience. It is a peer support for parents, but when we message it about its benefit to children, and child development, children with disabilities in this case, the effect is obvious. And it does seem to make sense on a certain level where parents might value supports that are about their child doing well at the sacrifice of supports that are for them as individuals. We know that both are important, but this framing shone through.
Yeah, it is quite, it's fascinating, it's interesting, and it works. We're actually now reviewing our resources and literature. I have spoken probably for the last 20 years about how difficult parenting can be. So the shifts are not easy, but they are having to happen for us.
Okay, that can take us on to the next of the seven sort of recommendations or tips. This one's around not judging with messaging and building on this kind of framing work, aiming not to inadvertently judge or evaluate parenting. Once again, we've looked at the terrain, we've mapped what's going on, perhaps in terms of cultural models, and we've got a recommendation about shifting the conversation. This tip is around working with messages which do avoid that judging or judginess in our messages around parenting. Without needing or wanting to point fingers, we can see that in our day-to-day media and perhaps in our own materials that we have used in the past, we do at times inadvertently, perhaps, and with the best of intentions, point to parenting being either good or bad. This is part of the national conversation, and we do notice it when we do this kind of framing work. We can see examples. But it's not always around the very obvious nature of perhaps being judgmental in our language. Sometimes it's more nuanced. There can be instances where again, with the best of intentions, we're messaging around parenting or whatever the concept is, and we're in a more subtle way building in that judgment or perhaps deterministic thoughts around what parenting is. On that score, I'll pause just for a moment on this slide and we can have a look. So what we're seeing there is one example of a messaging piece on the left, which is with the best of intention, perhaps using that judgmental framing, and on the right, it's being reworked to have a different focus, what children need.
I've actually always found as well that sometimes data can come across as quite judgy. So when we do a lot of work, I do a lot of work in remote communities, travel around Australia, mostly the Northern Territory. But when you use data, you can actually alienate people by trying to convince them of the seriousness of the problem. And what you're actually doing is activating a whole range of messages that you're not intending to give them. So we're actually not only just reviewing our literature for the words that we use, but also the way in which we use data and information, so that we're not, you know, it would be like having your suburb come up as being the most disadvantaged, you know, with the highest crime rates, a very unsafe place for children. And how does that make you feel? So I think we just need to sometimes be a bit more thoughtful, not just about the words, but the way in which we present information to be more effective.
Excellent point, Leslie. Leslie and I were lucky enough to attend a Frame Lab just in the last week during National Child Protection Week as well, where we were focusing on this work. And that did come up. The notion of, yes, reframing and shifting the conversation from parenting to child development. Very good point. But it's not just about the words. Data, statistics, and how they're used are just as important here. And we did really dig into that conversation around, as you put it, Leslie, you know, listing prevalence or listing rates or, you know, naming suburbs. These things are in themselves messages. And when you want to communicate data, it's often important that you do want to communicate the data. But what might it be triggering if we hark back to those models, those kinds of perceptions in people's minds around an issue? What might you be triggering with the data, which is a non-productive trigger? So that's something that does extend data. We can jump on to the next tip or recommendation that comes out of this work. I'm going to recap again because I love recapping. We mapped the territory. We looked to shift a conversation, in our case, from parenting to child development, child well-being. We think about how that's being received, and we watch out for perhaps judginess or unproductive triggering. That's where we are now. Now let's focus on a particular tool. Any frame or a set of frames can really benefit from some explanatory tools. We love them every day when we read newspapers or the websites, and we get those infographics or we get those interactive graphs from ABS. Explanatory tools are really, really helpful. This tool is the tool of metaphor, often recommended out of framing work. Why metaphor? Metaphors are often visual, and they provide a mental image that can stick and that can help shift a conversation. It can communicate quite a lot with something which is quite narrative, quite story-like. And before I even go on, I'll make the most important point around metaphor, and that is they need to be tested. So with this work, with the Frameworks Institute, we tested a number of metaphors, quite a range actually, that drew on the data, talked about parenting in different ways, and then, you know, NBNB tested them in an empirical way. So metaphor can help you get a lot across in a simple message. In our work, the metaphor that tested best and, you know, may still need to be adapted for certain contexts, may not work perfectly for everyone, but the one that tested quite well and we're rolling with is a metaphor around navigation, parenting as a navigation. This slide depicts that in a basic way. The key components are: when you're raising children, you're navigating, you're on the water. The challenge is that in times in life, certain times, you're on rough waters. When you're in need of support, you might be looking to lighthouses and safe harbors. With that simple story, we have a metaphor that depicts supports in a certain way and depicts the journey of parenting in a certain way. Why go with that kind of metaphor? Well, just to hark back to those models earlier on, those cultural models, this kind of metaphor is nice. It does at least three things. It helps avoid the model of individualism. It's not all about the parent themselves and what they are doing. There's a lot of other factors involved. It helps redirect from the model around natural parenting. That's a model that simply says parenting comes naturally. You're born with the ability to parent well, or you're not. And it also redirects from one of those tricky models of parenting that we found, and that is fatalism. know, the world is a difficult place today, and it's going to be hard to succeed in the job of parenting. Those are some models we do see, and this metaphor, this navigating metaphor, helps. And this is an example of what can happen when the metaphor gets put to use. What you're seeing here is a poster developed for National Child Protection Week with the support of the government, the Australian Institute of Family Studies and NAPCAN. Working with Parenting Research Centre, we came up with a quite simple and we think elegant representation of that metaphor. It's simply pointing people to the toolkit from a poster which draws in elements of that metaphor. The other thing about metaphors is you don't have to repeat the story in its entirety. You're using it as an inspiration for your language. In this case, a poster using a lighthouse and certain wording that's drawing on that metaphorical language. A quick other example of some other work that's drawn on the same metaphor, but from a different campaign. This is a national campaign happening through social services who had came up with a video which also draws. Let's have a look.
Raising children is like sailing. For healthy development, children need an even keel. But things like stress, health problems, and financial difficulties can make it harder for parents to navigate family life and provide this even keel. Just like how we build lighthouses and safe harbours to guide and protect boats during heavy storms, we can help parents by providing the support and understanding they need during the first 1,000 days of life, which are so key to children's lifelong health and well-being. This support during difficult times will make for smoother sailing and help all children in Australia to thrive. For more information on child development and parenting in the early years, visit the Australian parenting website raisingchildren.net.au/first1000days.
I'm just going to jump over a video we had there where you could see people reacting to that metaphor, because I want to hear Leslie react instead. Leslie, talk to me about that metaphor, but also another one you'd like to share with us, just to make the point around telling a story.
The use of metaphors is a very powerful tool, as we know, and it's also a very common way to engage audiences from different cultural backgrounds and different levels of language, different styles of communication. It just creates another way of communicating very effectively. And one of the ones that I thought was interesting for me is some metaphor work that's done in the field of domestic and family violence, which is around the Shark Cage, and people can look for that information. It's just an example about an effective way to talk about a very complicated topic as domestic and family violence is, in a way that people actually can then understand quite a complex topic, but in a way that makes sense to them, and they can actually turn that into their own. So that's just an example of a program that uses a metaphor very successfully to talk about a complicated topic. And National Child Protection Week, you would have seen the artwork that's been peppered through this presentation, has all been obviously inspired by the metaphor and the ability for young people and families and other organisations to engage with us because we use the metaphor has been quite successful in Child Protection Week alone.
Mm. And like I say, metaphor is one great tool for helping with explanation. Jump onto the toolkit. First, find that poster. It'll take you to the toolkit that sits behind this work that helps you look at other tools. So metaphor, a great tool. I'll jump through the next two tips that help us get through the reframing exercise. This one is around order. Simply says, if we are leading with a particular frame, then go with it first in your messaging. So here on the bottom half of this slide, we're saying, you know, a frame which establishes the context for children and getting good support is often going to be more productive than, let's say, at the top half of the slide, a frame which begins or leads with effective parenting. Because with the bottom one, you have a contextual understanding. Maybe you're talking more about what's good for children, but you're talking context. And that means that parenting is contingent on, it has factors around it that help with support, rather than perhaps a frame that says good parenting, bad parenting, effective parenting, which could lead to some triggering of those models around individualism. So order matters. I'll just go to six, which says, show, don't tell. We talked about metaphors, and whether it's a metaphor like the navigation one or another metaphor, it could be good to use visual, narrative, storytelling tools to show what you're trying to say, rather than lay it out in great detail in words. Many of you might be familiar with the brain architecture metaphor for the early years of life. Many of you may also be familiar with the serve and return metaphor used for explaining interaction between parent and child. If you'd like to know more about them, I would suggest looking at the toolkit we have again, or looking at some of the great work done by the Harvard Center for the Developing Child. Great work there that frames those interactions between parent and child in ways that are quite engaging. So show, don't tell. Leslie, talk to me about show, don't tell.
One of the examples I think that is most powerful in my experience has been around talking about brain development was to not talk about neural pathways. Was my first great learn. But the other one is about we have, and many people do use rice in stockings, weighed to simulate the weight of a baby's brain at birth, at 3 years, and then as an adult, to actually physically demonstrate the importance of those early years in terms of how brains develop and grow, which has a very powerful way of getting your message across without talking about very complex language around brain development.
So the idea of using physical or visual approaches to getting the frame across are really helpful as tools. Heading towards our last tip here, our last recommendation, tell a story. Now, you might be using a metaphor to tell a story, but overall, a strong recommendation from this framing work was to plan. Have a plan for how you're going to take a frame into action. And that is, yes, it includes maybe the use of metaphor, but it means more strategically, what is your plan? So this slide is a little busy, but I'll just focus on the three parts of the arc. Start with, in your organization or with your colleagues or your friends, why does it matter? Why are we looking at this framing business? What's the reason we're trying to shift a conversation? On to the second part, how does it work? What does it mean to actually shift a conversation? What is it we're trying to shift? And what explanatory tools are we're hoping to use there? Yeah. And then that third important part, what do we need to do? What's our first action? What's our second action? How are we going to get this framing to take flight? And to finish off on an example, we talked about a poster in this presentation and the artwork you've seen peppered throughout. That's just some examples of a framing job around a particular metaphor getting used, and it took flight in terms of some public communication. So that's a sort of potted history of this work and where we've landed at the moment. I'd like to again acknowledge the funders and partners in getting us to this point in the research. I'd also like to acknowledge the organizations, including our own organizations, who are now on a bit of a journey with us, where we're taking this framing onwards and we're in an implementation phase, if you like. Thank you. Thank you.
Yes, very excited to be part of that journey. And particularly excited because what we found from our work around framing Child Protection Week in a very consistent manner is that it's made us more effective in getting our messages across. Now, who doesn't want that? The journey now is to reflect on all of our current work and our past work to explore what needs to be adapted and changed as we learn more. Mm. And as we learn more, we change.
Well, thank you very much, Derek and Leslie. That was a really engaging presentation, a lot of information to absorb. And I think it's really interesting how this research has unfolded. We've got a few questions coming through, but I imagine that, like myself, there are a few people sort of just digesting this, the information that kind of represents a bit of a paradigm shift, perhaps. And to clarify, that we had some questions about whether the toolkit will be available. The toolkit will be, we've got a link to the toolkit on the online forum, and we'll provide a link to that. as well as the name of the study, if you didn't catch it, that's available too. Derek and Leslie, I was the kind of question that occurred to me is, I was just kind of thinking, where would people start with this approach to framing? I know you've provided a few case examples, but could you provide like any other examples of where to begin with this? Do you begin with your communications on your website? Do you have any advice or recommendations, ideas?
I'll reflect on that, and then Leslie too. Generally, what comes out of the framing guidance is sometimes a question, this seems like a lot to take on. Maybe it is a big shift in the conversation. How do we start? The best way to approach this is to, first of all, get as familiar as you can with those models that are being offered. And then, as you suggested, Adam, it can be a case of just starting with your communication. What's happening in your messaging, in the different parts of your work, and is there time to do a bit of a frame game, checking on how that communication, how those messages stack up against the recommended conversation chain, the recommended messaging that's coming out of the framing. I'd like to add again, we're not aiming for everybody to say the same things or use the same words when you do framing research. It's shifting a conversation so that they tend to align or generally point in the same direction by avoiding unproductive frames. And so, Leslie, from your perspective, getting started, what do you think?
So what we have developed in our organisation as part of that has been a small team who are committed to learning the most that they can about the changes that we need to take to create and develop a bit of a list of the kinds of things that we know that we can say and say them well, and start sharing that with our colleagues and, as you're saying, and reviewing our materials. So as we become more capable of reviewing our materials, then we're capturing the ways in which we communicate and sharing that in our workshops, online, in our parenting resources. So it is it's a journey about developing more skills. And what we learned is that it is actually practice. It sounds and feels a little clunky when you start talking in metaphors, but what happens is you become more confident the more you use it, and it just becomes smooth sailing.
Oh, nice one. Okay, so that would be a general kind of answer there, Adam. It's essentially trying with some first steps around reviewing messaging, and then over time you start to become more adept at what you're trying to avoid and what you're trying to advance.
Yeah, excellent. Just sort of expanding on that kind of thought, there's a question with regard to the different kinds of communication. On the one hand, you have like interpersonal level communication, and on the other, more of a macro one-to-many type style of communication. Is there anything that you could say or comment on with regard to more of the interpersonal conversations that you might have with a parent or with a family that you could elaborate on?
That's a great question. How does framing come into play in different modes of communication? When getting into, say, some reframing work on parenting, which is the one we're talking about, or on another topic, often the advice is think about how your messages are shaping. Are they triggering perhaps unproductive models of thinking, or are they helping by perhaps going with a child-centric, child development language? Now, that's the advice, but how does it look in different modes of communication? The answer is not too different. I mean, when you're talking about the message, that's one thing, but when you're talking about the mode, it really is about tailoring the message for that mode. So let's just get practical. If I was in a conversation with somebody and we're talking about parenting, I would now, having been through this journey so far, I in my mind, I would be looking for opportunities to simply talk about what's good for children, what helps children do well, while having that interaction. In a parenting support context, maybe a practitioner working with a parent, they will be doing the work they've always done. Communications professionals will always be doing the work they always have done. This doesn't change the processes or the mechanisms of our work, but you might find yourself discovering opportunities to talk a little differently, and then you might see the engagements a little stronger. Leslie, yeah. Your thoughts on that personal intercommunication?
Absolutely. So what we've learned is that there are some really key words that you can use that can really create a negative response in people. So those words that we're trying to avoid, those kind of judging words, can be very powerful in a one-to-one relationship. People who actually have a strengths-based way of working and talking will also find this quite a comfortable fit. So rather than talking about what's not working and how hard parenting is, talking about the joys of parenting and the important job of being a parent and the important job of raising our children. So even that simple language, and I have constantly talked about negative aspects of parenting, and now that I've made the change, I find it quite jarring when I hear other people talk kind of negatively about parenting and join in that conversation with how hard it is and how difficult that journey is, rather than talking about what you want people to achieve, which is a sense of being supported by those around them in their parenting journey.
And just another quick comment on that. To be clear, we're not saying that through this research work and its recommendations, it's time to deny the fact that parenting is hard. This is about how language can help with the engagement. And it's the recommendation is, perhaps when talking about parenting as a struggle, and yes, at times it can be, but when talking about parenting, it can be more productive to frame the parenting job around what's good for children and more aspirational language around children doing well. In terms of engaging, in terms of progressing the conversation and supporting the job, it's about that more than, reflecting or empathizing on some natural facts about the hard job sometimes.
Well, in talking about hard job, I feel like the questions are getting harder, which is great. Great questions. We've got a few questions just around how does this issue of framing apply to more high-risk situations or where there's conflict? So there's examples of family breakdown or conflict or family violence where children have been removed and placed into care. Are you able to provide any sort of reflections on how this might apply and maybe some issues that people could think through with regard to that kind of work?
Thanks. Yeah, it is a good question. I mean, it's a complex world, and often we're facing true vulnerabilities and disadvantage in the work that we all do. So the question is very valid. What does framing bring to the work when the work is at the pointy end, and there is complexity and there is true struggles for say children who are at risk? The answer might seem a little unsatisfactory, but the answer is essentially the same as the answer for the more positive aspects of support, and that is, with this work, the intention is to help have conversations or send out messages which promote a productive way of discussing and supporting the job of parenting. So when we had that slide around things to avoid and things to advance, or when we have that recommendation around focus on the child more than the parenting, those ideas apply or could apply to any situation of support. Even if the situation of support is one of those more complex or highly sensitive areas. In our workshopping this week, Leslie, we had exercises where we tried out the framing approach and using these recommendations in contexts that might be around child protection and, for example, the sensitivity around a parent who's sitting and hearing the messages. How could we have more productive interactions in that space? It was something that was possible to explore. It's hard to unpack in a webinar, but The recommendations can be quite universal once you get used to trying them out.
Absolutely. It is also about not tapping into those natural emotions that families who've experienced extreme trauma have fallen into about how they think about parenting, that it is overwhelmingly difficult and that cannot change. So by not feeding into that language and that mindset, you have a greater opportunity of engaging them in a really useful conversation about their children's safety and well-being, rather than talking to them about their ability to parent or inability to parent. It's not about good or bad parenting, which is such a very difficult place to come back from.
Thank you very much for those responses. I think we've got time for one more question. We had a couple of questions just about the nature of the research and how these metaphors may or may not apply to diverse populations. Thinking, for example, of culturally and linguistically diverse communities or Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander families, for example. Was there anything, were there any differences in how the metaphor of the lighthouse and choppy waters might apply to different populations?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Very good question, and a natural question to ask living in Australia. We have such a diverse population. We have so many different contexts of support. What do these metaphors mean? What, as explanatory tools, what do these and other explanatory tools mean if you're working in very different contexts? The simplest answer is a metaphor is essentially a kind of a story or a way of thinking about the topic. You can adapt it. As long as you're holding through to the basic idea of it, it can be adapted and reworked for the context you're in. The metaphor is not about using the exact same words in different contexts. You might use its main sort of notions. You know, there are safe places for support that are our lighthouses that are guiding parents along their choppy waters at certain times. That notion could be used in different ways, using slightly different words in the context that you're working. Also, the point around the metaphors or any of the explanatory tools is you might feel that it needs quite a lot of adapting, or you might feel that you need a different explanatory tool for your setting. And if that's the case, that's all good. The main message there would be it's always important to test what you're aiming to use before you use it, because you might be saying A, but they're hearing B. Leslie, do you want to comment on from your perspective on the context and how things might need to be different, metaphors or otherwise?
If there is a current metaphor that's well received and respected and understood in a culture, then that's where you can work. If it's working already, then you can, you know, take advantage of that knowledge that exists within communities around their own understanding, their own use of metaphors. So use what works.
Yep. And the Frameworks Institute do also recommend this idea that you can build on what's there in terms of a story or a narrative or a metaphor. If you're going to use something new, just ensure it's been tested and tailor away.
All right, thank you very much, both of you. Just looking at the time, we have to wrap up pretty quickly. Thanks, Derek and Leslie, and thanks everyone for attending today and all your questions. Just before you head off, I just want to mention that if you weren't aware, that AAFES is hosting its 16th biennial conference next year, and we've got a call for abstract submissions. It's closing in 7 weeks on the 21st of October. So if you have a paper that you'd like to present at the conference, please head to the AAFES conference website and make a submission. Please also follow the link on your screen to our website to continue the conversation. And as you leave the webinar, a short survey will open in a new window. We'd appreciate your feedback. Thanks again, everyone, and we'll see you next time.